This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 293. In this episode, I'm going to talk to Todd Baginski about Power Apps and Flow, recorded live February 28th, 2019. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC. Hey everyone, it's CJ here. I am flying solo this week. AC is flying off around the country somewhere, teaching a course in person, I believe. So he is unable to join us this week, but so you're stuck with me, unfortunately. But fear not, I have somebody far more interesting in store for you this week. I was lucky enough to catch up with a good friend of mine and friend of the show. He's been on before quite a while back, Todd Baginski, who is prolific in the SharePoint and Office 365 space. He's a Microsoft MVP and was very generous and kind enough to come on the show and share some of his knowledge and understanding and things he's been learning about Microsoft's Power Apps tools and technologies. Something that, as you will hear in the interview, you will understand more of that I know nothing about. And so you might be thinking, hey, some of these questions are a little noobish. Most of this interview was for my benefit as well as yours. So hopefully you can get something out of it as much as I did as well. So without further ado, let's roll with the interview with Todd Baginski. Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring, unlike anything you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality. Try Raygun free at raygun.com today. Hey, we all know that sometimes shift happens. That's why this spring, the inaugural Shift Happens conference will be coming to Washington, D.C. on June 12th to June 13th. Hear from industry heavy hitters, change agents, and innovators as they share digital transformation wisdom. With keynotes by Microsoft's Jeff Tepper and Tony Towns Whitley, and analyst insights from Constellation and Forrester Research, this event is not to be missed. Over 2 days, find out how to get the most out of your Office 365 and SharePoint investments, and hear about the successes and failures firsthand from some of the largest and most regulated organizations. For more information, visit www.shifthappenscon.com and use the discount code CLOUDSHOW for 25% off registration for both single and group discounts. Todd, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be here, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So for those of you who are listening to this who don't know who Todd is the famous Todd Baginski. He's partner and CTO at Canvas, a consulting business, and also a Microsoft MVP for what must be going on 12 years? Definitely over 10. There you go. So, welcome to the show, Todd, and thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. Glad we can make it happen on short notice.
Yeah, for sure. You've actually been on the show before, but it was quite some time ago, a couple of years ago, perhaps, you were saying, right?
Yeah. Andrew and I caught up at Ignite, and we talked about SharePoint Framework then.
That's cool. Well, welcome back anyway. So, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with what you're working on these days, do you want to give them a sort of a quick overview about the work you're doing with Power Apps and those kinds of technologies to just sort of fill people in?
Yeah. So after a good decade and a half run of doing a lot of SharePoint and Office 365, we had the good fortune to get looped in with the Power Apps product before it was a public beta. And we did some work on that. and learned it and provided feedback to the product team. And then we started getting some opportunities to do projects for the office marketing product team, as well as the Power Apps team, and created many different samples and a lot of the templates that you see on web.powerapps.com today. And then the market kind of took off at that point with people saying, whoa, what are these Power Apps? How can I use it for my org? And now we build them both for Microsoft projects as well as real world applications too.
That's awesome. Yeah. When was that? When did you start working with them roughly? Like, has it been a couple of years yet?
2.5, 3 years ago is the first time we touched it. And then is it about 2 years, maybe a tiny bit less than two when it went to the public, I think.
Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah. Why do you think they've taken off like that? What do you think it is about Power Apps as a technology that's meant that the sort of hockey sticking in terms of usage and what's the word I'm looking for, like adoption?
I think there's a couple different reasons why. From a technical point of view, when we developed lots of mobile apps, you know, in the past, and we saw that story go from, you know, when you do like the native development in Objective-C or Swift or Java or .NET, whatever platform you're building on. And then we all saw that morph into the tools like Xamarin that allowed you to write the code in .NET, and then it made it work on all the devices, or like PhoneGap, which became Cordova. And now you're writing web pages that through their APIs can talk to the hardware, and building mobile apps like that. And those things are great technologies, but you don't have to be as hardcore of a developer with those given technologies to be able to build apps that work on phones, tablets, and the desktop at the same time when you build with Power Apps. And so just the speed of development and the speed of being able to ramp up and not having to be such a deep expert in the technology to pull off really cool apps that implement serious use cases in real world scenarios, it just is easier to do it with a Power App. So I think that that's one reason why. And I think the other reason why is a lot just on the way that Power Apps work, that you don't have to have really hardcore object-oriented programming experience to be able to build a Power App. You still have to know how to be a developer, how to architect properly, you know, handling big data sets, offline scenarios, all those kind of things. But the actual code you write is a lot simpler than the other ways that you write code to do this. So I think that's another reason why they're taking off. And then I think the third reason is the community. It's huge already. Tons of people doing it and sharing what they've done, and some really amazing things, all the way from people like Brian Dang at Microsoft. He made Space Invaders on a Power App. Like, you can make
what?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
And the community is just so strong already. I think with so many people sharing what they've got, it's really energized it and helped it grow real quick. And do you remember when SharePoint was like 03, 04, around 2003, 2004 era?
Oh, yeah.
How it hit that critical mass all of a sudden, and there were a lot of us in the community helping and other people learn and putting information out there. Power Apps feels to me like it's at that same spot right now.
Interesting. So it's become useful enough and powerful enough that it's getting real adoption, and therefore people are investing in it, in the ecosystem. Yeah. And you get that sort of virtuous cycle of in the community as well. That's nice.
Yeah. You know, fourth reason just hit me, Chris, and I haven't really considered this before, but when we had SharePoint, we went in 2-3 year cycles on when we'd get a new version of it.
Yeah.
And as you know, with the cloud and everything Microsoft does, every week you get another minor change on something that is improved. And every single quarter, or at least half a year, you get a bunch of net new functionality.
Right.
And so I think since things are growing and evolving so much faster, it gives people more confidence to jump in and say, if it doesn't do it today, I see it on the roadmap, and that's only 6 months away, so let's go for it.
Yeah, that's nice. You know, as you were describing those benefits, you know, around access to quite powerful tools by, and you don't have to be quite as technical as a hardcore developer, for example, It reminded me of access, right? So Bill Gates was always really passionate about, so when I worked at Microsoft, he worked at Microsoft for a while, and then he left to go do the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but he kept coming back to Microsoft and worked quite a lot with the SharePoint team. And one of the pieces of feedback he was always giving us was, you've got to bring the power of access to end users through tools like SharePoint, right? Mm-hmm. And which is quite odd, because he's a really hardcore dev kind of guy, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
And yet he totally understood the power and the value of bringing really powerful tools to non-technical, not as technical people, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's those same benefits that you mentioned sound very familiar and similar to the reasons why access just flourished probably, I don't know, 15, 18 years ago now, right? And became a really popular tool because, like, my dad was building little mini apps using access to manage his car club, for example, And stuff like that, that I don't think I've seen another technology quite like that since that's really hit. People are doing a bunch of it in Excel and things now, but not quite like the way it was with access. And so maybe, I don't know, do you think that analogy is relevant?
I do.
Or am I barking up the wrong tree?
it's kind of like saying they've developed tools and technology that allow you to have self-service ability to spin up some kind of simple app or form And tie it in with the workflow or simple approval versus having to know how to write code to even get off the ground with it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think that just
opens. Funny you brought up Access, Chris, because we actually use Access as a back-end database where we track all of our financials for our company. I mean, we have Salesforce to do the, you know, the whole sales process and tracking that. But when we actually record the money going in and out, we're using Access and the little front end we built for that. It just works Outstanding.
It doesn't surprise me. The first company I worked for straight out of university was a shop that was building Access apps. And we moved on to VB apps. And then obviously the web came along and all with ASP first and then ASP.NET later. But there are thousands of Access apps. I remember working for Microsoft in New Zealand, and I got a call from the CTO at Weta Digital, and they were making the Lord of the Rings films at the time. And he was freaking out because one of their production systems that they use for shooting, it manages all the scenes and all the notes and all the production notes and all this. And they hit a 2 gig limit in their Access database, and they couldn't, none of the production could move ahead because they'd hit a 2 gig limit. And they had to basically go through this upsizing process up and move their database into SQL, and then they could keep their Access front end. But Yeah, it was right in the middle of shooting Lord of the Rings. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah, hand off to snap his fingers and make that happen.
No, exactly. It's not magic.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because when I went to New Zealand and was teaching SharePoint training down there, that was around the time that the movies had just been released. And I remember so many flyers to come tour where the Lord of the Rings was shot and all that.
Oh, it's still a big thing. There's people that go down there and do Lord of the Rings tours. Yep, pretty funny. Anyway, back to Power Apps. So a lot of our audience or a lot of our listeners are, you know, 365 people, right? They're implementing 365 in their organization, or they use it or build things for it and stuff like that. So for those folks, what do you get? What's the integration between the two like? Is it like peas in a pod, or is it like a bolt-on you got to go get? What's the integration in 365 like for those folks who might be staring at a Outlook Web Access inbox right now and wondering what an icon is, in the app launcher or something? I'm a total noob here, so I don't even know how you get to it. I haven't played around with it for a long time. So for those folks, what's it like with Office 365, and how would they see it manifest and what they used to?
The integration story is really solid. It's getting better all the time.
Is that from a UI perspective or a data perspective or a bit of both? Or
I would say more from the UI perspective, it's great. You can make a Power App look like anything you want. I mentioned some people make video games out of it. And on the Power App community call last week, we had Michael Mendoza on, and Eichel replicated Twitter in a Power App.
Huh.
It's pixel perfect. So pop open Twitter, look at it, and go, what can I make a Power App look like? You can make it look like that.
That's awesome. So so could I make an app, say, for example, I wanted to track all of our hardware assets in our company. We're a small company, right? Sure. And so I wanted to track all of our hardware assets. Could I go build a Power App and then have it, you know, save content in, you know, SharePoint lists or some SQL database, and then have the UI show up in the app launcher in Office 365 for people to go click on and go into their asset information? Am I thinking in the right direction there?
Yeah. That's actually a very good use case for a Power App. Let's say that you had a little barcode you had on all your hardware and some label maker you printed out and put it on there. Mm. You can make a Power App so you could actually hit a button on the Power App and take a picture of the label, scan that label, get the numbers off of that label, and then put them into your system. So if you move it from one room to another, like the printer moves down the hall or something, you need to update that, or it broke and you replaced it, scan one and then scan another and pull it in. And very easy to do that with. And you don't hardly have to write anything but like a line or two of what's essentially equal to code that looks like an Excel function.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Even with Cordova and those other...
Yeah, for sure.
You're writing more code than that to take a picture and to pull it into the system from the hardware. Where you can store it, yeah, you mentioned SharePoint, SQL Server.
Mm-hmm.
Power Apps on that all the time. And you just stick to the same rules of the thumb with SharePoint, you know? Like, all right, after a certain amount of items or in a complex relational data store, maybe SharePoint's not the best choice to put the data.
Yeah, gotcha.
For things that don't have a ton of data and are more simple, probably the asset management could even fit in there. SharePoint's a good choice.
Gotcha. Nice. Well, that sounds pretty straightforward to get started. What are some of the other places it shows up in Office 365? Like, I've heard about, like, you know, it'll integrate with like the list interface somehow in SharePoint sites and things like that now. What are some of those kinds of places that you'd see it integrate?
So you mentioned, can I pin my Power App up into the app launcher? That's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I've never tried it. I'm going to ask.
That'd be pretty cool, right? Because if you had an asset register app or some app that you wanted to push to all of your people, then it'd be great to be able to pin it to the app launcher or somewhere where they could find it.
But they are easy to get to because you can click the app launcher, pick Power Apps, and then there's a list of Power Apps you can open, and you click on it, and now you open it.
Gotcha.
I remember the last time that we met up, you were like, hey, do you know any way to pin a Power App so I can open the exact Power App I want
on
my phone instead of
like linking to it,
clicking it? And we figured out that could be done too.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you talked about how it can be in a SharePoint list. So if you have a modern list and you click like edit item, right? And you know on the right side of the screen, it flies out and gives you the form.
Mm-hmm.
You can replace that form with the Power App. And so you can make it look however you want. And it's really so simple. You go to the top of the list and click a button in the menu bar at the top of the list, and it actually launches a new browser window, opens up a brand new Power App that's tied to that list in SharePoint already. And everything is wired up for full create, read, update, delete. And then at that point, you can add more to it. Maybe you have
logic and stuff and things like that.
You want to get an address in there, you want to show a map of it, you know, add an image in your Power App and make the image source the URL to Bing or Google Map or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Pass in the address on the query string to that REST API that gives you the image back. And in a few minutes, now you've got a map that you can visualize in that edit pane. Or maybe another one is you want to do some editing of the data in there, but you want to cross-reference some other data source before you decide how to set it. Mm. So you could easily throw a grid or a gallery, as they call them in Power App, on there, connect it to that other data source. You can even make it so smart and say, load this gallery up and filter it by the value in this list column of this list item I'm looking at. And now you can look at that other data, make a decision, and decide how to edit your data in SharePoint. And when you're done, you just hit the button publish in Power App, and now there it is, ready to go in SharePoint.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I know. You remember the way we used to hack the schema XML to make a custom view or form?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think people who've never done that realize how awesome it is this way.
Don't remind me of Camel.
I'm telling you, one time I should write a book on that.
Write a book on Camel? Yeah, it may not be a New York Times number one seller, but...
I don't know if I'm up for the brain damage.
PTSD, for sure. So you guys are building real-world production level apps for people using these technologies now. What are the kinds of projects that you're seeing people are doing? Like, are there particular areas that you're seeing sort of emerge as really popular for technology being applicable to the right solution, being Power Apps? Are there areas that are sort of emerging that you think they're getting really strong in, like particular vertical or area of the business or something like that?
I think we've seen them in all different kinds of verticals. We have built Power Apps for folks that are everything from companies who build green buildings and maintain the HVAC and all the lighting for them. Mm-hmm. We're building a time tracking Power App for a company mm-hmm. like that right now. And they have 400 people in the field. Mm-hmm. And in the past, they had a paper time tracking system, and it all got mm-hmm. entered into Excel. And then they evolved that and they put it into SharePoint. But as time goes by, with that many employees, that many weeks, that many days, that much data, eventually you start getting to the point where their SharePoint lists really aren't the right place to put the data.
Gotcha.
And then also, the SharePoint lists didn't have a really quick, streamlined user interface that allowed someone to punch the time in or copy this week's hours to next week and just change that slightly, right? Mm-hmm. So the whole user experience of being able to do time entry quickly, efficiently on any device and from anywhere, and as well as being able to manage that in the office, that turned out to be a really good candidate to build a Power App because
gotcha.
I think we're going to roll that one out tomorrow or the next day. Mm. And that project has only taken 1 month. And that went all the way from conceptualizing the whole thing to design to implement on tablet and mobile. Power BI reports in the back end, SQL Server and Azure, standing everything up completely from scratch. Yeah. And here a month later, you got an enterprise time tracking system. That's hard to do in other technologies.
Yeah, for sure.
On those devices.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I mean, it's like that mobile worker enablement, you know, that yep. field enablement. We've seen a lot of Power Apps there. And we've also got some customers who actually sell products. And they are actually rebuilding their products that in the past were built on older technologies. And now they're basically productizing, or they're taking their product and they're building it on Power Apps, and they're going to their clients and they're saying, look, I've got a new streamlined version running on all these devices, all this new technology. And here's the bonus. By just paying me the same license you were to use my software before, that not only covers your Power Apps license, but now your organization has Office 365. Mm. And so that's like a big selling point for that client. And this client is actually has products that are working in public service. It's an application that allows people to assign defenders, public defenders, to people who've been convicted of crimes. And it walks it through the whole process of assigning the attorney, allowing the attorney to log all their expenses and all their time on it, and then having the judge be able to approve it And then even feeding it into the payment system to get it to the attorney. And again, it's another power app that you try to pull all that off in another technology on all those devices.
Yeah.
Are you going to pull that off in 6 weeks? Probably not.
Not a chance. But yeah.
That's what we're tracking for right now. So that's pretty amazing.
So is a lot of it, or a good percentage, like data entry type applications, you know, like you mentioned timesheeting, you mentioned cost capture and expenses and things like that. Is that like a big center of gravity for these types of apps, data entry and things that would have been done? Because, you know, mobile is obviously pretty strong. And so things that might have been done on forms and pieces of paper for data capture in the past and modernizing those old paper-based processes.
That's definitely one of the hot spots for it. And I think a lot of people have a misconception that power apps are always just about capturing information and putting it into a form. With all the capabilities you've got with Office 365 and Flow and all these connectors that Flow and power apps have to tap into practically anything, or the ability to quickly take another API that already exists, and if they don't have a connector for it already from Microsoft, can wrap that connector so quickly. For example, in a 20-minute session at Ignite, I walk people through step-by-step how to take an API that you don't have a Power App or Flow connector for and authenticate to it and be able to call it and get the data in. And so in 20 minutes, you're talking to the data you want.
Yeah,
that's really amazing capability. And so going back to what you were saying, is it all data entry? No, the answer really is many times it is simple data entry things, but many times it's much more than that because you can tap into all these sources and have all this information at your fingertips.
I was going to ask about, you touched on it there, extensibility. Mm-hmm. So like when you hit sort of one of the edges of Power Apps and you say, oh, there's a system I want to talk to, or it doesn't have a widget that lets me display, I don't know, 3D x-ray models or something like that. What are your extensibility options like for getting a developer involved perhaps and, you know, building a new widget or component or connector or whatever for connecting to those other things?
There's a few different ones. If you look at it from the data point of view, it's called that custom connector.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially a custom connector, you feed it the Swagger data, the metadata that describes the
API you're
talking to. And then you figure out and map your input and your output on your payload. Mm-hmm. And then you select which type of authentication you'd like.
So you don't even need to write .NET code or anything like that to connect to those things.
No, not an ounce of it. You just get that. What I like to do is open up Postman and go hit the API according to whatever system's API doc is.
Yeah.
And I export the Postman collection and I go import it into the custom connector and voila, 95% there. Select your authentication method. And sometimes the import doesn't work perfect and you may have a property or two in the schema of the data going in and out that you need to change a data type on.
Yeah.
To make it play right through the connector. But that's really about it. And so what I love about it is it's easy to do. You don't have to support the code and have a bunch of custom code. And when you're trying to actually proof of concept something, can this be done? Are there three different ways I could go about it? Do I want to try all three and see which way works the best?
Mm.
It's so easy to do that.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So earlier on, you mentioned one of the really nice things, one of the benefits, I think, is that constant iteration. In a cloud world, they're constantly improving the tools and putting out new versions with more features. I don't even know if you can call it a version anymore, but you know, constantly releasing new updates and features and things. Mm-hmm. What are some of the cool things kind of improvements or things you've seen recently in Power Apps that really sort of blew you away recently?
The most recent one has definitely got to be what they're calling components in Power Apps. So imagine you're a web developer you want a really cool grid, right? And the one that Microsoft ships is really great nowadays, but you may have those niche requirements on something related to like a drop-down list within a column showing a grid or so, you know, crazy things. So what do? You go to Telerik or Infragistics or, you know, one of those control vendors, and you're basically buying their components. Mm-hmm. PowerApps now has components. So vendors, including ourselves, are going to start offering components in the app source so you can just download them and snap them into your PowerApp and not have to write that whole thing from scratch. The other benefit, whether you're trying to be an ISV with it or just using ISV components, take that whole piece out of the puzzle. Let's say you have a header in your PowerApp. Up until components hit, I had to copy and paste that code from my header or my menu into every page that needed it in my PowerApp. Didn't take a long time, but like, what if I wanted to update it and change the background color? Now here we go. How many screens are in my app that I have to do this to? But with the component, you can build a header, for example. And now you just go to each screen you need the header on, insert component, pick the header component. It's there. Drag it into position. Move on.
So it's kind of like a user control in the ASP.NET days, right? You define a piece, you know, a bit of UI and a bit of code behind it and sort of package it up, and it's a control, and then you can go use it in a bunch of places.
Great analogy. I hadn't thought of that before, but that's very true. And the other cool thing about them is they don't work just within that power app. If I build a component in my power app right now, and I see another power app coming down the road, and someone said, I want the hamburger menu in the top left, and my menu flies out when you click it. Mm-hmm. And then I see my choices, and then it flies back in. Well, you could build that in your first Power App as a component. You're done with your Power App. You can export the component separately. So the component can actually then be imported into a separate Power App. So they're not just reusable within the one Power App. They're reusable in any Power App that you have.
Nice. Oh, I can see.
Imagine you're building 20 Power Apps.
Yeah.
For your company, you probably want your look and feel on the menuing system roughly the same. You've already wrote it.
Definitely.
All you have to do is throw different data at it to tell it the different menu options.
Yeah, I can see a real little ecosystem springing up from control vendors. Like you mentioned, that you've built some controls for displaying data a certain way or a particular use case or whatever, and you can go sell them to other people and they can use them in their Power App.
Yeah. Like that's awesome. A real popular control that we built in the, I think, almost every single one of the sample Power App templates that we built for Microsoft is, I just call it an Active Directory people picker.
Oh, yeah.
Xbox, you start typing in, and every character you type in, it filters the list of people down in a drop-down appearance below it, like, you know, in a grid or gallery and Power App, and you pick the one you want. Now, cool, I got that person, go assign them to a task or whatever. We built that thing over and over and over. And
I bet.
Taking something like that as a component and just having it available in your org's bag of tricks, if you will.
Yeah.
Anytime that requirement hits in a Power App, you just add it in and move on.
That's awesome. So I know this is a bit of a hornet's nest, and we've had a bit of a laugh about this in the past, but how do I buy this stuff? Like, do I get it as part of 365, or do I have to go buy something?
You get part of it as 365, and it just depends on what you're trying to do with it, on which license, if you can use the out-of-the-box ones, or if you need to go to Power App Plan 1 or Plan 2.
Gotcha.
Things like that, and it's been changing a lot recently, and at the April 1st, I think, is the date when they're going to cut over how the licensing works.
So April Fool's Day, huh?
Where they're, yeah.
So it's in typical Microsoft fashion, it's a bit of a hornet's nest by the sounds of it. It's hard to figure out what you might need.
Yeah, it can be. And it also helps to have experience developing them and going through the process at least once. So you just kind of know the questions to think about as you get ahead of time. And like one of them is connectors. If you're using, they have connectors they call premium connectors.
Oh,
so
yeah.
To certain services, you may need a higher license level to make a custom connector like we were chatting about. Mm-hmm. You need to have a higher license level to do that.
Gotcha.
The administrator of your PowerApps environments, who sets up your environments and access to them and data access policies and things, that person needs to have a higher level. Mm-hmm. But if not everyone in your org does.
Hmm. Gotcha. Figuring out what you might need and all that is quite complicated, and probably Microsoft Docs, you know, typically it's not super easy to figure out what you might need and things. So have you got any tips on that people might be able to use or go read up about that could help them through some of this pricing malarkey?
Yeah, it's definitely UC's blog. He wrote an article on this, and I just discovered it, I think, about a month ago.
And excellent.
Someone else asked about it, actually, and someone said, have you seen his blog? And I went and I read his blog, and he does a really good job explaining what changes are coming, which what you need to consider as you think about it. And he also does a really good job saying, you don't always have to have every single person who used this Power App with the P2 license. There's ways to work around that and keep out of the box license. For example, if you want to have some interaction with your Power App with some kind of thing in a connector, right? And let's say that connector takes a license in it that requires the P1 license. One way to do it is to, from your Power App, call the connector directly. What that means is that everyone in your Power App now needs the P1 license. But another way to do it is have the Power App call Flow that calls the connector and then return it back. So if you make a service account with a P1 license and create that flow with it, now your users can use the Power App without the
cunning
P1 license. So understanding those little bits like that on how to be clever and only apply the license where you need it can really help reduce your costs on that.
Huh.
You know, when you build Azure, how you're like, how am I going to architect the data? Am I going to put it in table storage or hot storage, cold storage?
Sure.
And sometimes you'll say the performance on all these is the same, but look at this one's really cheap. And maybe over time, we're going to have a job to move the data out of hot storage and put it into cold storage to reduce the cost. And so you play those same kind of scenarios through your head with Power Apps.
Huh.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Rewind back to 15 years ago, either someone had the license to SharePoint or they didn't.
Yeah.
And you develop accordingly. But now your job as an architect and a developer has come down to, how do I develop the most cost-effective solution too?
Yeah. Yeah, what's going to make the most sense?
So UC's
blog. Point to UC's blog for sure. Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. People can go read up about that. It's really fascinating.
He even says in his blog he will keep it updated as things change over time.
Oh, nice. So it's sort of a living, breathing document, so to speak.
So that thing's in my bookmark bar now.
I bet it is.
Double check on the Microsoft site.
For those of our listeners who are thinking about going and having a play with this, such as myself, because I really have not even touched Power Apps probably in a year and a half. I mean, I briefly opened it up way back to go just start fiddling around and playing in there and seeing what was what, but really I know nothing. What do you think the best places to get started for people to learn this stuff? Do you publish content anywhere that could help people? You know, think like those kinds of resources that you think might be helpful for people trying to get up to speed on this stuff.
Boy, there's a lot out there, and some of it is free, and some of it you can pay for. And the good news is, because there's so much out there, depending on how you like to learn, there's content out there that can help you learn that way.
So,
for example, you said, do I publish stuff? Yeah, I have a lot of articles on my blog on things I've learned along the way that I thought were useful. Lots of times I blog them just so I can remember how to do it again in the future. Hey guys, new project. This blog post has it. A lot of people blogging. I have a YouTube channel. Shane Young's got a great YouTube channel. Daniel Christian, Rory, Keith, Watling, lots of people.
Gotcha. Paul Combs, so if you're into
Combsy, I can think of all those people right off the top of my head.
Wow.
Who
That's great.
A lot of YouTube videos. So if you like the video thing, go into YouTube and type in what you're looking for.
Right.
There's also the official Microsoft stuff, right? They've got their Microsoft Learn has courses on it that you can take. And to become a PowerApp partner, we had to take that course and prove we had that competency. So I took that course myself, and I'd already been doing PowerApps for about a year at that point, but I actually pulled out some really good nuggets from those courses.
Little
and they take you from nothing to a functioning power app. To pass the course, you actually have to upload your power app you've built, and someone peer reviews it and says, wow, does it look great?
That's
so
cool.
Really actually proven walking the walk, talking the talk on that one.
Nice.
And then there's also those sample templates. If you go to web.powerapp.com, and that's a real fun way to learn. If you're looking at what you can do in a power app, there's a couple dozen out there now. And you may very well find the scenario you're looking for, like expense reporting or time tracking. Or
gotcha. So there's a whole bunch of pre-built ones, so to speak.
Yeah. And when we built them, we basically said, how can we build a bunch of apps that talk to practically everything in Office 365?
To really show all of the options.
Yeah. So we show SharePoint and Dynamics.
It's like a modern Fantastic 40. Is that what you're saying, Todd?
Yeah, something like that. Power 40, maybe?
Maybe it should be the Power 45. Nice.
Those are real helpful. You know, if you're the kind of a guy or gal who likes to just start with something that's running and modify it to your needs, or just kind of look at the code and say, how does this work, and inspect it and dig in it and figure it out, those are real good ways to do it, because all the patterns in there, we didn't just hack those together. They went through reviews and they've been revised even a couple times.
Yeah.
Patterns that you're looking in there are valid. You know, as you look at them, like, I can actually copy and paste this right to my app, and this should be the right way to do it.
Gotcha. So where can people find you? So you mentioned your blog. What's your URL?
It's just toddbaginski.com/blog.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
And are you on the Twitters or anywhere else like that that you keep an eye out for people asking questions about power apps or forums or something like that that you'd point people at to go ask questions?
Oh, great. The best spot to ask questions is the power apps community. If you go type that into a search engine, you'll find all the forums there, and they're very lively. There's lots
gotcha.
Of MVPs and lots of people on the product team answering questions.
Gotcha.
And I'm on Twitter. My handle is my name, Todd Baginski.
Gotcha.
And I post like what we do with power apps on my blog and Twitter, and toss it on LinkedIn too.
Nice. And so if people get into this and they're like, yep, we've got a great use of power apps, we think, but hey, we just don't have the time and all that sort of stuff. You guys, it's time for a bit of a plug. You're part of a consulting business that goes build these apps for businesses, right? So where could people get in touch if they want to get some help or, recruit you guys to go help build one of these things?
Yeah. Our website is Canviz, CANVIZ.com. We always nice. Like to think of it as can visualize. We can visualize the solution.
Ah, is that actually the background behind the name? Or
that's
is it? Or is that something? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
People always ask us where Hyperfish came from, and I don't have a great answer other than we were brainstorming and fishing for ideas. But fishing wasn't really that exciting, but hyperfishing sounded more exciting.
It does.
It's really that simple.
It makes for great logos of fish and things like that, right?
Exactly. Hey, well, Todd, I really appreciate you coming on the show again. It's been a while since we've spoken to you. Power Apps has come a really long way. I'm actually really looking forward to trying to find some time to go play around with it again and go see what I can build. I love learning by doing and getting my hands dirty. So I'll go give it a shot. You've motivated me.
That's cool. I think you really like it. You know, one thing that makes them so fun to develop is it's almost instant gratification as you build.
Right, Right. You can really see that you progress as you go.
You're not mucking with a bunch of CSS and JavaScript and all that other just to get to the point where you got something, you go, okay, here it is, and show it to someone. It's much more rapid to get to that same point.
I bet. Cool. Well, yeah, like I said, thanks again for joining us on the show. I hope listeners will go hit your blog and go learn about Power Apps, go check out some of your videos and things, and get in touch with Canvas if you're looking for some assistance with building your next amazing solution with Power Apps. So thanks again, Todd, and we hope to have you back on the show, maybe not in another 2 years, maybe a little sooner than that.
That sounds good to me. Thanks again for having me today.
All right, catch you soon. CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
So I hope you got as much from that interview as I did. As you heard, Todd's a great guy, always willing to share his knowledge and to help other people, which is obviously he's built a great reputation in the community around SharePoint and Office 365. But through that, through speaking engagements and helping people out and things over the years, he's been engaged for a really long time. And so it's always a pleasure to speak with him. Really stand-up guy, and we're very lucky to have him on the show. Okay, so end of the show. I've got a pick for you this week. Now, this one is pretty, I thought was pretty interesting. It comes from Twitter by a guy called Tommy Tavella. I think I'm spelling his or pronouncing his name correctly, who has a really interesting use for technology he found on GitHub called Nativeyer, which basically turns apps into native desktop applications by wrapping them. And the interesting part about this is that he uses it with Microsoft Teams. Now, this is great if you're a person who needs access to multiple different Microsoft Teams organizations and is frustrated with things like incognito browsers and profiles in Chrome. You can use Nativeyer for doing that. And it's really simple. You go and install Nativeyer from github.com. It's a project they've put up. He's found that you can go download. And then it's a simple command line app to run and will launch Teams in a native wrapped application. And you can fire off a bunch of those and then log into different organizations and things. So super great for demos or development tenants, or maybe you're a guest in multiple different Teams organizations. You don't like flipping back and forth. Now you can open multiple desktop applications for each one of those organizations. So it's called Nativeyer. And it's up on GitHub. I will link to the tweet in the show notes, to the tweet that we can see the command to launch it, but really helpful for Office 365 development or demos and things like that. Hey, so thanks for bearing with me on the show solo this week. We will be back to our regular programming next week with AC back on the show, and we will see you all then. Cheers. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.